I'm Lee Brown. Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, we're heading down to the heart of Texas in the ATX with Ryan Rodenbeck. And we have a really fun conversation here that goes all over the place. So enjoy the conversation with another one of my wonderful Austin Board friends. And I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
So tell my audience who Ryan is. Where are you located? What did you do around real estate to land at Realty Hack? Give them a little bit of the story.
Yeah, so my company name is Spyglass Realty, and I'm the CEO and broker of Spyglass.
Is that at the ocean? I was making my spyglass.
Oh, yeah. The real answer is that we couldn't find another name that was that recognized, was available for .com and the Texas Secretary of State. And the Spyglass Drive is a very recognizable drive in Austin. And the first time I gave out my business cards, literally probably the third business card, someone was like, oh, yeah, I've heard of you guys, which is impossible, but it worked.
So did you open a second office in like Galveston or Corpus Christi yet so you could actually put a spyglass on your sign and it would make sense?
No. I did open office in Corpus for a little bit, but it didn't.
That's a special market.
Yeah.
You should hand out some promo items. I mean, I'm really feeling the spyglass, but I'm in North Carolina. You know, Blackbeard was from here, so we're very pirate friendly.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I consider myself a pirate in some regards.
What'd you do before the business? How did you land in the space?
Well, so I am from Louisiana, and my story is that I didn't graduate college. I actually didn't even graduate high school. I dropped out, got my GED, kind of regretted that for a while and wanted to get into sales and started a business filing claims for class action lawsuits. And then I started my own real estate company with my sister and a guy out of California. And it was a huge mess and learned trial by fire. And then after selling the property management accounts from that, I started Spyglass Realty in 2008.
So did you say you dreamed of doing claims for class action? Because I've never heard of that on a child's, my future profession. I want to file claims on class action. Was that accidental?
No, it wasn't a dream. I just fell into it. I was working for a company in Houston that was doing it, and I figured anybody could do it. And I ended up moving to Austin, so not to be in their market. And we started this company, and we did a lot of work for property management companies. And statute of limitations ended. We thought it'd be a good segue to move into investment real estate. And that's where I started. Now, my company is not investment real estate right now. We do investments, but right now, I think our biggest kind of claim to fame over the last few years is that I started Spyglass in 2008 in order to just have my own broker's license. I had like 4 to 5 agents with me for reasons that I do not know. In 2015, I realized I had a good knack for bringing in internet leads, and I had about 7 agents at that time. And I said, let's make this a real brokerage. So from there to now, we now have 115 agents. We've won some prestigious awards over the last year, and we've just had phenomenal growth.
That's a lot of agents, especially with the way you describe it from, I don't know how I got these agents to now I have 115. So did your culture move as you changed focus in the business? Did you learn what characteristics you were looking for in a real estate professional, or what changed in your mindset as you were growing these various businesses?
Well, so I think the main thing was I was determined to have a real business and not just work in my business. And so I sought out, I've been going to real estate conferences for 15 years and sought out advice from friends, and someone recommended me. Do you know John Sheplak?
Yes.
Yes. So I started working with him in 2017. I mean, he's a huge part of my success. He taught me how to recruit. We also started using EOS and management team together and got someone who did not have a formal education. It was very important for me to learn everything I need to know to run this like an actual business, pretend like we're a Fortune 500 company. And so we started adopting every consultant, every system, every software we could to make this a really good business. And then the culture part of it was a huge focus on our mission, is like make sure that people are happy. And we wanted agents. We didn't want a body count where, as a typical for a bigger brokerage where you've got 80% of the agents don't do any business and 20% do. So with our company, we've got a decent amount of per year volume per agent, and we put all our focus on the agents.
So I think it's interesting that you pivoted in that mindset of, I didn't have a formal education, but we were still able to build this like a business. And all I can think is, nowhere in the formal education system are you taught how to run anything like a Fortune 500 company. I mean, we've got such a gap between our educational process and procedure and how the real world operates. You might be in better shape today because you did not go through that collegiate experience, drop all that money, and then still have to create it from scratch. So instead, you're describing building your business by grabbing best practices from all over the place, which should lead to happier, more productive agents who create happier clients and customers. Because I love the simplicity of your mission statement to make people happy.
Yeah.
There's no word salad involved. It's very simple. It's to the point, and your people should know what to go do.
Yeah. Well, and so outside of an MBA, I think you're right.
And you should say some MBAs, because it depends on where you go to get it. I would just posit that if you're at Wharton, you're not going to get an MBA that would build a real estate business. But if you went to Texas Tech, you'd probably get something that's more realistic, just because Lubbock is more of a hands-on town. I wouldn't even say, my daughter's going to Tech, so obviously I'm a guns up person. And I would never give any credit to UT for anything because they have bad behavior.
Yeah. Well, I can't say too much about UT. It's my hometown, but now.
Okay, we'll just fire up all the commenters. Austin Community College is probably better.
Well, funny is, like you talked about mission statement and core values, we dug into that big time because I had a nice canvas picture in the wall there in the other room that said mission statement and core values. And I could never tell you what they are, right? And I remember hearing Chris Lindahl speak at a conference, and he
was
like,
"Chris is so smart."
Yeah, he's great. He's great. He says, "Okay, how many people know what your mission statement and core values are without getting into your phone?" And I mean, like, no one could. So,
I know ish what it is.
Well, we spent days on it, and we looked at what our mission statement is, and our mission statement is we make good agents into great agents. And core values are non-negotiables. And when we look at that, it's be smart, be all in, do the right thing, and take action. And so in interviews, we talk about that with people. We weekly huddles with the agents. We give core value shout outs. And if someone is not embodying those, we're like, are you smart? Are you taking action? Are you doing the right thing? And I had a great example of this, two great examples of this in the last week. In the last week, I got a Texas Real Estate Commission complaint and then a letter saying that they're going to submit us to deceptive trade practices for two different agents. And here's why this is really important, okay? These agents are freaked out about this, and I completely have their back. And I said, look, here's the deal, okay? This is why I do the right thing is a core value, okay? I looked before I got threats from attorneys and asked for money on this. I looked at all the files, listened to the calls, every single thing. Okay. And when I looked at these, when I get some kind of complaint or some kind of issue, before I call the other agent, an attorney or whatever, I look at the entire file. Okay. And when I realize that my agent is doing the right thing and we're just being bullied, it's like, don't worry about it. I will fight this tooth and nail to have your back as long as you're doing the right thing. And so that's been one of these core values that people are like, okay, well, what does that mean? Aren't you supposed to do the right thing? Yeah, you're supposed to, but we don't always have that in real estate. But when you look at it from the standpoint of what I'm going through right now, it's like when my agent's like, I'm sorry I put you through this. I'm sorry I put this. Like, you didn't put me through this. You did the right thing, and I will fight for you, and we're going to win.
I love that. And I love that you're with them through the process because they're abiding by core values, which they are portable enough that they know it too. But also because they're compliant and they're following the compliance officer in the firm, there's a file that supports them as well. And as my very first broker said, if you never have a complaint filed against you, you're not doing any business. And I have never forgotten that. And so I tell my agents, because it's going to happen. Somebody's going to go sideways, and it could be valid and it could be invalid. And like you said, it might be bullying from the other side, but
absolutely,
it would never happen if you're not selling anything. So the question is, go back to, like you said, that you do the right thing and that you're file complete, then we can ride to Raleigh together. That's what we say. You might ride to Austin, but you're just riding down the street. But for us, we ride to Raleigh together.
The Texas real estate complaint, the guy was wanting $2,000 because he canceled after the earnest. And it would be so much easier and cheaper for me to pay that $2,000, right? But we don't owe that. That was not our mistake. It was his ignorance, okay? So I'd rather, and this sounds stupid, but I'd rather take the high road of where my principles are, and maybe it costs me more than that, but at least I get to defend my agent.
And there's a space for that, because the world we're in right now will tell you to take the path of least resistance always. And if the path of least resistance is telling the wrong party that they're right by paying them off, all you've done is feed a negative person more fuel that says, ha ha, I was right. Yeah. And if you weren't right, you've got to defend your practices. And I do wish more real estate agents were bolder about defending themselves, because I don't think they're wrong as often as they give in, because they just don't want to have a confrontation with somebody. And I should clear this up. I want the bad people to pay the price. Absolutely. When you screw up, you should own it. You should pay that price. But when you didn't do something wrong and somebody's coming after you, put all 10 toes down and stand tall and say, I didn't do it that way. And here's my file. I swan. It all goes back to why you keep a complete paper trail. In my office, I teach my agents to keep a phone journal. Like, if you're talking on the phone all the time, keep a journal, jot down who you're talking to and when, because if you've got a record and nobody else does, you've got more backing. And I want to support you.
Yeah, we had another one a few months ago where an agent, it wasn't really his fault, but there was a piece of advice that it should have been known by the client. And it was kind of in writing, but it wasn't that clear, right? In that case, I said,
see both sides, right?
I could see both sides. And that side, I said, God, dude, give him the $3,000 he's asking for, right? I could see, like, it wasn't like a blatant mistake. Those are the kind of principles that we talk about all the time, right? And that's been really helpful to our company, helpful for our culture and the progress of it. Like, when we have those conversations about our core values, and we say, look, here's the deal. If you don't embody these core values, it's not going to work out. But if you do, I can promise you'll flourish.
When you're building up agents that can stand up in a meeting and say, this is actually true. We're not just full of crap. We're not just blowing smoke. Our company means this. And then they can tell the story more effectively than you can, which to me, the mark of leadership, when it's not just you saying it, it's them taking note of your actions, which is also one of your core values, but they can sell you better than you can. And that's where your company grows.
And that's where we're at now. I mean, it took a long time to get there. And I remember when I had coached with John Shiplack for a little bit, and then I quit for a year. I got to 30 agents. And the funny thing is when I went back to him the year, one of the things he knew I was doing is I was doing a lot of content, my Realty Hack podcast. I do advice to agents, all that type of stuff. And he says, Ryan, one of the things I taught you is to make a bunch of calls in addition to your content. Well, how many calls a day are you making? And I'm like, wow. It's the same thing we teach our agents, right? And so that's why growth, whether it's from an agent or for a company, you got to go back to the basics. The content helps. Don't get me wrong. I send out content every single week, but that's still not going to mean they're going to call you. Okay. So we went from 30 to 50 to 80 to 115. Now I'm getting calls in. Okay. But not that many. But when I call an agent that's been on my mailing list for my email list for a year, and they're like, oh, I see your stuff all the time. It helps a lot. You still have to go back to the basics. And the same thing with real estate agents. Like, you need to be putting content out there, not like just the sold sign that says, hey, I just sold this property, but like things of value. Tell your clients what they need to know about the market, what they need to know about red flags, what they need about moving up and moving down, multiple offers. And if you do that every single week, or it doesn't have to be every week, but if you do it consistently, then when you call that past client or you call that lead that you've been nurturing for a year, it's going to be very warm instead of very cold.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime, while also managing sky high fuel costs at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now, and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link, www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. Absolutely. And you have to realize, too, that the people who call you after seeing your content, they already have a trust factor and a like factor, just like the agents that you call after they see it. It's already built in there because they've got some kind of a backing. And then the ones that call you out of the blue who don't know all your newsletters probably are coming in with a little bit of a black cloud over their head because they're looking for somewhere to land. And it might be a good fit, but it also might be a place, a trouble looking for a home, which happens in real estate too. And so we always have to think about that. When an agent leaves our office and lands somewhere else, if it's a great agent, I call that broker. I'm like, you just got a great agent. Good job. Because you know, it's the nature of the business. It happens. But when a bad agent leaves, you can't really call the broker and say anything. And it's just some people are focused on those core values and some are not.
That's right. Yeah. And I tell you, another thing I learned is exit your people with class. I've had a lot of agents come back. So
of course, it's the nature of the business. I mean, if you burn the bridge, that's the dumbest thing you can do in real estate because you may have to do a transaction together in the future. So why would you make that trouble when you don't need to?
That's right. Same thing with agents that have a client that leaves. Like, treat that guy like, you know what? Just say, I understand you wanted someone else, but if you need anything at all, even like a second pair of ears on this, give me a call. That matters. Relationships are the most important thing in this business. A relationship with your clients, a relationship with your peers, a relationship with your competition.
It was just funny. I feel like we all knew that the first week of COVID in March of 2020, when all the lockdowns and all the panic was going on, people actually missed each other and leaned into those relationships. But boy, how quickly that vanished as the world got back to normal. And then turns out we're more divided than ever. But the people that you found that you couldn't spend time with them for one reason or the other made you realize how valuable those connections should have been all along.
And that's right.
I wish those good lessons had stuck, but here we are. We get back to our old habits and let these things replace relationships because they're not.
In a general speaking, but like when I talk to agents and we do coaching on them, and like we provide leads for agents. We've got a ton of Zillow leads. We've got a ton of PPC. We've got a ton of SEO. But our differentiated value we have with a lot of different brokerages is we also teach agents to get off of my leads because they're not going to make as much money. It's a hamster wheel that keeps on repeating. And so the biggest education, teaching, training that I give my agents is spend 2 hours in your database every day. And that's what I learned when I got my license 20 years ago. It's like it doesn't change. The technology and the marketing, that's going to help you. But in the sense that in the very essence of what you do is maintaining a relationship. And you can't do that through marketing. I mean, you can, it helps, but you can't do that with technology. You got to go back to the principles. And if you can, get some automation to help you, right?
In other words, automation helps, technology helps, but you can't replicate a voice-to-voice call or an in-person meeting. And I don't care how much agents will tell me they can do all their business on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere else. You have to let that be a starting point, but that won't maintain a relationship like listening to somebody else will and reading their body language and being in community with them. I mean, I think there's so many people that have tried to replace connection with devices. It's a fool's game because it's just not sustainable. Real people like to have real relationships.
Yeah, no, I think I saw one or listened to one of your podcasts, and I think it was Follow Up Boss, one of your sponsors at one point.
They're fantastic. I love their stuff.
Yeah. So like,
it doesn't work if you don't call somebody and say, hey.
No, you're right. But what you can do is you haven't talked to someone in 6 months, a year or whatever. You can go back to that call, listen to what they said. I do this to agents all the time. They don't realize this. I'm like, talk to an agent I haven't talked to in a year. And I'm like, hey, your daughter was getting married and you were going to Hawaii. They're like, wow, you got a great memory. I'm like, yeah, I got a recording of the call too. I didn't say that. But you know what I mean? That's what we use that for. That's a good use of technology.
Absolutely.
with maintaining relationships.
And it's just not rocket science. I feel like we overthink everything nowadays. And I talked to so many agents, I'm sure you have too, that are panicked about AI and ChatGPT. I'm like, you have to understand, if you're talking to people and you're face to face with them, AI has nothing on your humanity. But right. It could totally help you figure out how to write that blog post with the scoop on where the dome of the Texas State Capitol building came from. You could write a cool little relocation snippet, and it will help you. Then when somebody calls you from the thing that it helped you write, then use your humanity to pull them in. It's got to be a both and, not an either or. You've been in and around real estate a long time in different facets, whether it's on the property management side, which is its own set of headaches and confusion, and then being a leader in a growing brokerage. So, of course, my audience loves a good story. So I'm dying to know what story you have to tell from the annals of Texas real estate that you would think the audience would be, what? If they hear it.
Yeah, I thought about this. I've got so many, you know, where to start, but I narrowed it down to the property management one, okay? Because it was the worst time, worst period of my life. It was horrible. And we had grown our management to 500 doors very quickly. They were like C&D properties, fourplexes. The property manager actually quit one day. And we go to the office, we start digging in. Well, there was about $90,000 missing from the owner accounts. Okay.
90.
Yeah. And at first we were like, oh my God, she took the money, she embezzled it. No, that's not what happened. She basically for about 9 months was getting vendors to be paid and not charging it to the owners, and it ate up that money. So yeah, and this is actually more common in property management than you would think. So I remember going to an attorney, my wife, and this was like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And he was like, this could be really bad for you. You need to clean this up right now. And the property manager left. I was in head of a sales team. Then I was reduced to a property manager myself. And like, I remember going out and actually cleaning a unit because there was an owner that was so pissed off about it that he didn't want to pay anything. And you also have to remember, this was during the mortgage, right before the mortgage crisis, right?
So people, because of course.
Yeah, they were buying a fourplex with 5% down. That 5% was out of a HELOC in their home in California. You know, it was insane. I remember one time, this is a big part of that story, right? Is that we go out to a house, I get a call, and the police are at a fourplex. It's right down the street. They're like, we need to do a wellness check. We think someone might maybe dead in the apartment. And I'm like, okay. So I go to the keys, which is a freaking mess. Like the keys were so unorganized. Just grab the key, I think it is. I go out to it, go out to the B unit, I remember. And the police, of course, the key doesn't work. Kick down the door. Okay. And of course, there's a dead body in there. Someone died of natural causes. Okay.
Was it the tenant?
It was the tenant. Yeah. So, okay. Well, that sucks. Whatever. Go back to the office. At this time, I was working 12 hours a day, 7 to 7. The very next night, I get a call from the police. Hey, we need to go out to the same property. We need to do a wellness unit check there. And I said, wait a second. Yeah, well, we need to get in the A unit now. And it's like, oh my God. We go out to that property. Of course, I just picked a key because I had the right one. Didn't work. Knocked down the door and another dead body, right? And I was like, oh my God, we have a gas leak.
A serial killer?
No, they both natural causes. Well, in that unit, there happened to be like a dog and a cat. So I'm like, okay, no gas unit. And it was just completely coincidence that that happened, right? But this is all going down while this whole property management thing's going. So we ended up selling the accounts, okay? And deposited a whole bunch of money. I remember we got like a $90,000 down payment. And, you know, that all went to healing the accounts. And my wife and I were at property manager that was buying the accounts. And this is after 2 years of trying to fix this thing, trying to salvage all the accounts so it could be sellable, trying to help all the owners make this mess go away. Signed the check. They give her the check. My wife and I are walking out the door. And I said, look, be cool. Be cool. Don't sell anything. We go down the stairs. We walk to the car. There's a window from the office looking in. It's like, be cool. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. Get in the car. Like driving out the parking lot. Be cool. Be cool. Don't say anything. turn to the left, we're out of view. Like, like we did it. We're out.
So, we're done.
Yeah. Lessons I learned there, Lee, is I didn't want to get into property management. My partner in California said that they were going to take care of the back end. I was real reluctant to do it. Ended up being a complete nightmare. So lessons I learned.
Listen to your gut.
Yeah. Stay in your lane and listen to your gut. You're exactly right.
I mean, it's a high headache, low margin part of the business, but I like to remind agents too, the code of ethics can save you from getting into a space that will drive you crazy, because if that's not your scope of expertise and you're trying to dabble in property management when you should be in residential, follow the code of ethics and stay put. But if you want to go learn residential and get out of property management, then find a mentor. But I am so impressed by professional property managers who don't lose their mind every day, because the sheer volume of petty things that they deal with is out of control. But beyond the petty, two dead bodies in the same quadplex. That sounds like a Netflix show, man.
Oh, for sure. What I found is that a great property manager is probably not going to be a great salesman. And a great salesman is not going to be a great property manager. And property management is a thankless job. You got to be wired for it. And in our case, we had a great property manager, but we didn't have the leadership skills that I have now to put that together. And I wouldn't want to do that because it's not in my lane. But I think the mistake that most people get when they go into property management is that they think that they can hire the team. But at least for me, it was not successful. And I think that if you're wired the same way as I am, you're looking for trouble.
But it goes into what you mentioned before about leadership, right? So if you're trying to hire people and you don't have the skills yourself, it's almost impossible to hire the right people, because you can't create a culture where you just don't have that expertise. It makes me think about, I don't know if you watch Kitchen Nightmares, the Gordon Ramsay show. I love to watch cooking shows. Oh, me too. I can watch it with my kids. And there's so many times he goes into a restaurant where the owner has never cooked, has never worked in a restaurant, and then they wonder why the whole thing is a mess. Well, they don't have the leadership skills because they never learned the hard skills to go with it. And I think it falls in with property management or residential or commercial or any specialty. If you want to do it, you better learn it from the ground up and make the skills happen.
What I do in my business, I have a real passion for marketing. I'm kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. However, when I'm looking to hire someone or I'm implementing a new marketing system, marketing technique, or whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to dig in for a long time, not a long time, but I'm going to dig in hard to make sure that I understand it enough so that when my marketing director or any of our VAs are working, I can't look at what they're doing and not understand it. Like, it goes back to what you're saying. You've got to have a basic level of understanding. And if you figure that out, because otherwise, when you're looking at the reports, you're going to be like, I don't know what this says. And you're not going to be a good tester at that. So know what you're doing before you hire or implement a new system.
Actually, it goes to your first story. If you know the system and you're paying attention, you don't wind up $90,000 in the hole because the charges aren't going to the right parties, because you would know what to look for and how to verify that the systems are in place.
Yep. And I still don't know how to verify those systems are in place, but I'm not doing property management.
So the property manager, so it doesn't matter. Did you ever recover that money? Did you go back to the seller, the property owners, and say, you owe us this, or did you just let it go?
We couldn't do that. Yeah, we couldn't do it because it had been months that have passed. And again, this is like right before September 2007 when everything bust. And like, these guys didn't have the money. I mean, when everything failed, they all went belly up. It made so much sense to me because these guys, every guy, I was 28 years old. Every person got into my car was older than me and smarter than me, right? The difference is I had been like a big Dave Ramsey listener. I went through Financial Peace University and like, oh, you should buy a refinance your house and get like 7 fourplexes. Well, no, I got like 3 houses with 20 to 25% down. And you know what? Like, I didn't have any foreclosures or short sales.
And you teach your kids spend, save, give, and then you can carry that mindset forward so that if they decide not to go to college, they can make good choices too.
Yeah, well, I haven't done that yet. We're working on that.
Oh, you don't have kids? Yeah, you should have a whole bunch.
I have a kid, but I haven't put those lessons to them. Yeah, we're trying.
You know, they have financial peace for young people.
I do. I know.
I think our church is going to put it on soon because, you know, we're all looking at this next generation and they've been given so few financial skills along the way. Like, even if we as parents try to instill it in them, if they haven't had a hard scrabble start, then it's hard for them. And my kids haven't had a hard scrabble because we've done well and we've taken care of them, but they need to learn how to protect credit and how to save and give. And
yeah, you're exactly
they'll probably right. They'll listen to that more than they'll listen to mean old mom here. I'm just a middle-aged mom.
Same here. And I learned my lessons by destroying my credit and fixing it. I hope, you know, they don't need to do that. So
yeah, no, they can get a lot further if they never have to rebuild. That's a hot mess. But Ryan, if somebody wants to talk to you about Austin, Spyglass Realty, your leadership stuff, how do they reach out to you and follow up?
You can go to Instagram at Ryan Rodenbeck or spyglassrealty.com or realtyhack.com.
And of course, all of Ryan's information, company information, handles, and phone numbers will be in the show notes for this episode. So if you happen to be away from an ink pen or a device, don't stress out because I got you. Now you got to say something nice about Ryan. You should totally back me up and tell me in the comments if Ryan should have a promo item that looks like an actual spyglass that his clients and agents could carry around. I think it would be a hot thing in Austin. And if I were eating at P. Terry's and I saw a spyglass in there, I would come over and absolutely hire that agent. I'm just saying, I think it's a missed opportunity for you. I love P. Terry's.
I love it. Oh, I do too. It's the only fast food I eat.
Because it's so freaking good. My son, who's 16, when he was in Austin with me a couple of years ago, I took him there and he likes to eat good food. And he fell in love and we had to buy the t-shirt. And so here he wears the shirt around town and nobody in North Carolina knows what P. Terry's is. And they're not planning to franchise anytime soon, which I would totally open one up. A 5-item menu, bring it.
Never been to P. Terry's without being in the street on a drive-thru.
And it's worth it. It's so much better than Whataburger. And your Whataburgers are bad. Ours are good because, you know, they didn't trademark that name. And so our Whataburgers are older than yours, but different logo, different everything.
Well, this might be anti-Texas, but I hate Whataburger.
If you had mine, which is across the parking lot from my office here, you would like Whataburger, but you'd like the North Carolina one, just saying.
I'll check it out.
Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show and for giving us some insights on leadership and culture and an entirely different pathway. I appreciate the conversation.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, guys. Stay tuned. We'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown or tweet me at Lee Brown or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.